From Hollywood, it's the new Edgar Bergen Hour with Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Sturt, Gary Crosby, Carol Richards, Jack Kirkwood, the Mellow Man, Ray Noble, and yours truly, John Heaston.
Never smile again. Oh, like I smiled before. Do-do-dee-doo.
All right, that's enough now. Why such a sad song, Mortimer?
Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Berg and I sort of got the dismals today.
The dismals?
Yeah. I'm sort of down in the Humpty Dumps.
I see. Why?
Well, I'm kind of worried.
Oh, I see. Worried about what? I say, worried about what?
Yeah. Oh, about what? Yeah. Well, I'm worried about things back on the farm, mostly. We got 16 new mouths to feed now.
Oh, a lot of baby pigs or chickens?
No, it's my Uncle Sorghum and Aunt Drusilla and their kids.
And their kids?
Yeah.
It's Uncle Sorghum and his family.
Yeah, I didn't even know I had an Uncle Sorghum, and they all moved in, and they're living there now.
Well, that's... How many children do you say?
16.
Are you sure there are 16?
Well, let me see. There's Vestibula, Twitchy, Narrowhead, Fungus and Grunion, Quagmire, Putrid and Slurp, and... And then, oh, yeah, then there's the triplets.
Triplets?
Yeah. Them that has gets, yeah.
What are the triplets' names?
Oh, they're Nert, Bert, and Squirt.
I see.
And then there's, there's the oldest sister, you know, Groucho.
Groucho? The sister's name is Groucho.
Yeah, they call her that because she has a mustache and smokes cigars.
I...
Yeah, that's the way it goes, yeah.
Well, that must make things pretty crowded around your house.
Oh, they're sleeping all over the darn place. In the kitchen, too.
Is that so, yeah? They don't mind that.
No, all except Cousin Twitchy. He ain't used to sleeping in a strange sink.
Oh, I... Well, they made themselves at home, didn't they?
Oh, they did that. They're even wearing my clothes.
Is that so?
Yeah, Herkimer, or Jerkimer, I call him. He got up this morning and got right into my best suit.
Oh, well, now, that is annoying.
Yeah, it certainly is. What's more, he didn't even give me time to get out of it first.
Mortimer, these people, they don't sound like very attractive relatives.
No. They sure made a mess of the house, too, I imagine. I didn't realize how dirty the house was until a dog came in and tried to bury a bone in the living room.
Tried to bury a bone in the living room?
Yeah. We got wall-to-wall dirt now.
How could they drag so much dirt into the house?
Well, you know, those little kids, when they go to sleep, you know what they play? They play that game, this little piggy went to market.
Well, that's very nice.
Yeah, but they do it with real pigs all around.
Well, I know it must annoy you, but remember, Mortimer, blood is thicker than water.
Yeah, I imagine so, yeah, of course. Then again, what isn't?
Yeah, I guess.
That's the way it goes. Yeah.
Well, relatives, of course, can be a problem. Do you know what Hubbard said about relatives?
Well, I don't care to listen to anything that kind of language, you know.
Oh, no. No, you've heard the saying.
Well, I don't...
Haven't you heard it?
I don't know.
Well...
Not yet, no.
Well, it was Albert Hubbard.
Oh, well, that's pretty good.
Well, I haven't said it yet.
Oh.
The devil gives us our relatives. Thank God we can choose our friends. Now, what do you think of that?
Well, how does it go?
He just went.
Oh. I must have been looking the other way.
Yeah. Now, Mortimer, how on earth are you going to get rid of that mob at your house?
Well, I don't know. I don't think they're going to leave.
Why do you say that?
Well, I overheard Uncle Sorghum say, we'll stay until he gets wise. And
oh, I see. Well, I'm beginning to see the light.
You are?
Yes.
Would you mind turning it up a little so I can see it too, Ed?
I don't think he's your uncle.
No?
No. And I don't think they're your relatives at all. I think they're a bunch of imposters.
Yeah,
I do.
You may be right at that.
Yes, of course. How can you be so stupid?
Well, it comes easy after you reach the first plateau,
I imagine.
Hello, Edgar.
Well, it's Carol Richards.
I hope you'll excuse my coming out early, Edgar, but I've been so anxious to meet Mortimer. Oh, he's really cute. Oh, Mortimer, don't tell me you're a shrinking violet.
Well, not exactly, no. I'm more of a stinkweed type.
Oh, come on now, Mortimer. Don't be afraid of me.
No.
I won't bite you.
You won't, huh?
Mm-mm.
No teeth, huh?
I think you better sing, Carol.
Yeah, go ahead.
You see a pair of laughing eyes, and suddenly you're sighing sighs. You're thinking nothing's wrong, you spring along, boy, then snap. Those sighs, they're part of the tender trap. You're hand in hand beneath a tree, and soon there's music in the breeze. You're acting kind of smart until your heart just goes whap. Those trees that freeze, they're part of the tender trap. Some starry night when his kisses make you tingle, he'll hold your hand and you'll hate yourself for being single. And all at once it seems so nice. The trees are throwing shoes and rice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the map. You wonder how it all came about. It's too late now, there's no getting out. You fell in love and love is a tender trap. Some starry night when his kisses make you tingle, he'll hold your hand and you'll hate yourself for being single. And all at once it seems so nice. The folks are throwing shoes and rice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the map. You wonder how it all came about. It's too late now, there's no getting out. You fell in love and love is a tender trap.
Now it is time for our Meet the People department. Our guest tonight is one of the foremost ethnologists in the United States, and his name is known the world over as one of the outstanding authorities on the American Indian. He holds the position of director of the Southwest Museum in Los Angeles. Here he is, Dr. Frederick Webb Hodge.
Good evening, Dr. Hodge. Now, this is a real pleasure to have you with us tonight, and I realize it may not exactly be good form to inquire into a person's age. You know, Jack Benny seems to dislike such probing, but I confess that I'm curious about you. Is your age a secret, Doctor?
No, I'm 39.
Oh, no. Not you, too, huh? This is contagious. No, seriously, Dr. Hodge, about how old are you?
Well, Mr. Bergen, to tell the truth, I was 91 the 28th of last month.
Well. Oh. 91 years. Well, isn't that wonderful? And how did you celebrate your birthday?
Oh, my friends gave me a party and we really had a grand time.
Oh, yes. Dr. Hodge, as the world's foremost authority on American Indian, you've probably devoted a great portion of your life to the study, haven't you?
Well, as a lad in Washington, D.C., I became interested in Indians, and I never have outgrown that lure. It's been most fortunate, for to love one's work is one of the secrets of longevity, I believe.
Yes. Well, now, while we're on the subject of longevity, you certainly should have some ideas on that. What is your thinking about, smoking and liquor?
Well, for years I've smoked a pack and a half a day, and I enjoy an occasional drink. But my friends have always insisted I should indulge only in moderation if I want to live to a ripe old age.
Mm-hmm. And are your friends as chipper as you?
Oh, most of them have passed on.
Well, they probably didn't take their own advice. Well, so you've given up alcoholic beverages then, haven't you?
Not altogether. I still like a nightcap before retiring.
I hope you're not like Effie Clinker. You don't find yourself retiring two or three times a night.
Oh, no. One old-fashioned is quite enough for me.
And undoubtedly you subscribe to getting 10 hours of sleep per night?
I prefer 8 hours sleep, but can get along on 7. And I have thrived on 6. When I was preparing the handbook of the American Indian, it was not unusual for me to sit up doing research, writing, reading proof, until 2 or 3 o'clock every morning. This lasted for 11 years.
Well, you certainly do contradict all the rules I've ever heard laid down for longevity.
Yes. Well, maybe so. But my opinion, there's nothing more important than leading a normal life. If I have a formula, it can probably be summed up as happy work, happy friends, happy family. I'm most fortunate being married to a charming, wonderful woman. I have good friends, and my life's work has been one I love.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you've been interested in Indians since you were a boy. How did you happen to make it your profession?
Well, I became field secretary of the Hemingway Expedition in 1886. That was the first organized archaeological expedition into the Southwest.
And on the way, did you happen to pass Jack Benny in a covered wagon?
No, but the expedition was a great success. And after my return to Washington, D.C. in 1889... I joined the Bureau of American Ethnology of the Smithsonian Institution.
Well, now, what about the famous Hawiku expedition that you organized?
Well, under the auspices of the Museum of the American Indian in New York, we made expeditions to excavate the Hawiku ruin in New Mexico, which was identified as one of the so-called Seven Cities of Cibola. Mm-hmm. That is, the Zuni Indians of old.
I see. Now, in conducting these excavations, just what do you look for? What is the index of the culture of the people? Is it the things they've left behind, I suppose?
Well, primarily, in most instances, yes. However, the real test of the Indian's culture is not always discernible in the material things they leave. The Iroquois, for instance, left very little, yet they had reached perhaps the highest degree of culture than any other Indian tribes of North America north of Mexico.
Well, in what way would you say did the Iroquois exceed that of other Indians?
Well, in a great variety of ways, one of which was the freedom enjoyed by their women.
Uh-huh.
They had women's suffrage, and bear in mind that was many, many years before our own women were so privileged.
Now, that is really surprising. Now, did the Iroquois women ever exercise their, well, what shall we call it, voting rights?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
The men could not even go to war without permission of the women.
That'd be a good way to eliminate war. By the time the women get through talking it over, the crisis would be over. Or they could just send the women. Dr. Hodge, you are now director of the Southwest Museum here in our city, isn't that right?
Not exactly. I have been director of the museum for 23 years, but at the close of January, I took a sabbatical leave.
I see. It's a sort of rest up a little bit, huh?
Well, of course not. I took the leave in order to devote my full time to research for the Department of Justice, Indian Claims Commission. In other words, as my mother used to say, it's like stopping work to haul timber.
In other words, you're busier than ever now.
Oh, yes. We are endeavoring to settle the Apache Indians' suit against the United States government for land said to have been taken from them, thus involving large parts of the Southwest and to run into many millions of dollars.
Sounds like a very important job. Well, Dr. Hodge, I want to thank you for being our guest tonight. A man like you, who is 91 years young, is certainly an inspiration to the rest of us.
Thank you, Mr. Bergen.
And it's getting a little late, so if you'd like, I'll drive you home after the show.
Oh, there's no hurry to get home. Let's have a nightcap.
Well, let's live it up. And thank you again, Dr. Hodge.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Gary Crosby returns to sing All at Once You Love Her.
You start to light her cigarette, and all at once you love her. You scarcely talk, you scarcely met, but all at once you love her. You like her eyes, you tell her so. She thinks you're wise and clever. You kiss goodnight, and then you know you'll kiss goodnight forever. You wonder where your heart can go. Then all at once you know.
Her cigarette.
Her cigarette. And all at once you love her.
You scarcely talk.
You have scarcely talked.
You scarcely met.
Yes, you scarcely met.
And all at once
you love her. You like her eyes, you tell her so. She thinks you're wise and clever. You kiss goodnight.
You kiss goodnight.
And then you know.
And then you know.
You kiss goodnight forever. You wonder why your heart can go when all at once you know.
Then all at once you love her.
Gentlemen, once again, it is time for our weekly excursion into the realm of culture. Tonight, our forum of intellectual titans bring their great wisdom and perception to bear on the ever-continuing scholastic debate, Whither Literature? Here they are, Edgar Bergen and his End Table.
Thank you. And good evening, Battle.
Oh,
hiya, kid.
Crazy, man.
Yeah. Good evening, Professor Kirkwood, Professor Noble, and, well, if it isn't Mortimer Snurd.
Well, if it isn't, the stork played a dirty trick on my mother.
That'll be enough.
That's exactly what my parents said when they saw me, huh?
Gentlemen, our subject for tonight is whether literature. Sure. Now, to start the discussion, would you like to define the meaning of literature?
I say, you chaps, look, I should be quite good on this subject, really. You know, I was born in a library.
No, no, you were actually born in a library.
Oh, yes, yes.
How is that possible?
Well, Mother kept trying to tell Dad, but the librarian kept saying, shh.
If your parents were smart, they'd have brought you back after 2 weeks.
See, old boy, after all, I did have to be renewed, you know.
There's a North American van leaving for the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
Why don't you get on it? Or better yet, get under it.
Now, please, please, that will do. Professor Kirkwood, what would you say is your favorite book?
Well, it used to be Louie over on 3rd Street, but the cops grabbed him.
No, no. Oh, too bad.
Yeah, he was on his way to being Bookie of the Month.
Yes.
Get it? Bookie of the Month, huh?
Yes.
That was a loser.
Professor Kirkwood, your education is sadly lacking.
Oh, you hurt me, boy. I'll have you know I went to school, and I really enjoyed that day.
You mean you only went to school one day?
You're supposed to go back?
Let's continue. Now, Professor Snerd, who is your favorite author?
Well, I noticed there's a little known name. That is my name. No, he's dead, too. Let's see. When they begin...
I ask you, who is your favorite author?
Oh, Arthur Godfrey.
No.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. Say, I hear he isn't around anymore. He just fired himself.
Oh, no. Gentlemen, I'd like to get one sensible answer from this panel, if I'm not being too optimistic. Professor Noble, yes, do you know Dickens' works?
No, but I'm glad he got the job over.
No,
there.
No. I'm referring to Charles Dickens.
Oh, Charlie Dickens, of course. Charlie Dickens. Yes, how silly of me. Yes. Oh, his books have always occupied an important position in our house.
Is that so?
Oh, yes, yes. You see, we have a table with one short leg.
Yes. This is hard to believe. Haven't you read any of Dickens' famous classics? You know you might enjoy Little Women.
Oh, I've enjoyed quite a few of them.
But we're still on the subject of literature.
I think I changed it for the better.
Yeah. This is awful. Our modern writers have been compared unfavorably with the great 15th and 16th century authors, such as Shakespeare, Chaucer, and Bacon. Now, Mortimer...
Guard,
well, what do you think?
I wasn't thinking.
How would you compare the modern ones with Shakespeare, Chaucer, and Bacon?
Well, I'll have some.
You'll have some.
Have some what? Some of that bacon? No.
I'm speaking of Francis Bacon.
Oh, the mule? No, not.
This is Bacon the Man.
Oh, well, count me out. I ain't no cannonball.
Gentlemen, this is a discussion on literature. Certainly you have read some books.
Oh, of course.
Well, naturally, yes.
I just read that book about a bad day at Santa Anita.
Yeah? A book about a bad day at Santa Anita?
Yeah, you know, the naked and the dead.
No.
Yes. Another loser.
Yes.
I say, did any of you chaps read that new English bestseller, the typewriter murder mystery?
No.
Or Who Shifted Lady Chumley's Carriage?
Oh, My favorite is one of those Mother Goose stories, you know, like Little Boy Blue can blow your nose on the load. You're a better man than I am, Rin Tin Tin. I like it.
Now, please, gentlemen, please.
I say, that's the book I'm waiting for. Just between ourselves, is the new Kinsey report.
Yeah?
Oh, yes. This one's on the love life of the mashed potato. Yeah.
The love life of the mashed potato?
Oh, yes, old boy. You'd be surprised at what goes on under that gravy.
I gotta take a look sometime.
Gentlemen, we are here, I repeat again, to discuss the basic difference between modern and classical literature. And there are many of them. Mortimer, would you like to illustrate?
Hmm? I say, would you like to illustrate?
No, I feel all right.
No, no.
I maintain that we're taking this subject too lightly. Now, you know that Socrates, what he said about the importance of literature.
No, I don't think I was listening.
Well, I... He said it before you were born.
Well, I know I wasn't listening.
For your information, Socrates lived many years ago in old Greece.
I say, he must have been a rancid old duck.
You're not trying to keep this on a level keel at all, is it? I just can't cope with this abysmal ignorance being shown here tonight. This monumental illiteracy. The crass superficiality. The utter incomprehension.
Ah, shut up.
Charlie.
But now, here is Edgar Bergen.
And now it's time for another bit of sage advice from our rural philosopher, Mortimer. And here he is with Snurd's words for the birds.
A half a loaf is better than no rest at all. Fuck you.
Good night, everyone.
With Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Sturt, Ray Noble, and the entire ensemble next Sunday at the same time. Tonight's Edgar Bergen Show with Jack Kurtzlitz, Carol Richards, Gary Crosby, and the Mellow Men was produced and transcribed in Hollywood by Sam Pierce. Script by Fire Rose, Hilda Black, and Dino Clinker. This is John Heaston speaking.
Stay tuned for CBS News, followed by Miss Brooks on the CBS Radio Network.